10 a.m. Events occur.
Hey, good morning, everyone. It's Wednesday. It's May the 4th. Hey, well, how about that? I just realized May the 4th be with you. It's Star Wars Day. You know, all the Star Wars fans out there, including myself, enjoy this day quite a bit. Not that I'm going to be doing anything Star Wars themed aside from dressing up into my Chewbacca costume, but that's normal Wednesday for me on just about every week. So I don't know if that would necessarily be a celebration of Star Wars, just more or less just great timing when it comes to the date. But no, it's May the 4th, which means we're pretty much in the thick of the NHL and NBA playoffs. The NFL draft is over, and that's pretty much where we are. Baseball is moving. It's moving. It's still there's still a lot of interest right now. Obviously, baseball season is so long, so we haven't got to the doldrums of the baseball season, which is basically the absolute emptiest part of the entire sports calendar. When it comes to August, like late July, pre NFL training camp, and really before you really get into the thick of everything. So, a lot of good stuff going on right now. Obviously, John, the last time we were on here, we were talking about the Celtics game one loss. We're going to talk about their game two loss, but I want to ask you something. I want to get off sports for a minute. Are you a horror film connoisseur? Do you enjoy the just the horror and the gore and that type of genre of film?
No, I don't. I mean, I love Hitchcock, so mm-hmm. that's more.
No, yeah, I'm definitely not talking. History. Yeah, definitely not, yeah, Hitchcock,
no.
Here. Well,
no, Friday the 13th, Part 13. No, I'm not into that stuff.
Well, that's too bad. I happen to be, and I found myself running through the slasher series on Netflix over the course of my flying over the last couple of days. I got a lot of time to binge watch some series that I was needing to do, but I just wanted to comment because it's like it's incredibly gory. I mean, I'm talking like really like I think personally that sometimes gore is cheapened, like it kind of cheapens the film, like it's overdone, and sometimes, like, especially horror films now kind of tend to lean on that quite a bit. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, oh, we'll just yep. make it over the top gory, when it's like, eh, okay, great. I'm a little desensitized to that. So I was watching the show. Now, you know, look, I thought the plot the plot was not predictable, but it followed a formula. So you can kind of pick up by the time you were watching the third season, because it was one of those anthology shows, John. So it's mm-hmm. like each season, it's a new, same, you know, roughly the same actors and actresses play different roles, and it's just a whole different story or whatever. But I did appreciate the just incredible amount of just gruesome gore and blood and guts that they put in the show. I was impressed, because it was over the top, yes, but like not in a bad way. Like, it was wow. That's I okay. For example, John. There was a coffee, I guess a barista, you know, some guy who owns like a little coffee shop, and he had a one of those glass tubes that hold like coffee beans. Basically, you know, after his face was like cut up and everything, he was still alive, by the way, had it shoved in his mouth and had hot boiling water poured down his throat. And they showed this, like, normally they do like those like little cutaways. What I was like, wow, that's actually, I'm into that. I like that type of gore. I kind of miss that. You don't get that too often. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not a big gore fan. Like, I'm more of a fan of, like 80s horror movies. 'Cause I feel like there's just enough of that, but you also have a great story or suspense and all that stuff. So, not sure why I thought of it this morning. I'm not sure why I'm waking up first thing in the morning thinking about blood, guts, and murder and burning people on fire. But, you know, hey, it's just a Wednesday, and like I said, it's a little weird today. Did I scare you off the line there, John?
No, I'm still okay. Here. I think we skipped the beat for a second.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I was so horrified that I just... left the conversation.
Well, look, I mean, I'm not used to seeing this, but I got to give him credit because they really went over the top with the cunning and the knives. But if you're not a big horror film person, then you're not going to appreciate it like I do.
Yeah, I mean, like, actually, my favorite Western of all time is The Wild Bunch, which came out over 50 years ago. I didn't see it at the theater. It came out in 1969, so my parents were pretty cool, but they didn't let me go see this violent film when I was 6 years old. But my favorite Western, it's very violent, but it fits into the story, and it's not constant. It's like, there's probably three or four scenes where it's like, whoa, I can't believe this was made in 1969, that I appreciate. You know, The Godfather's pretty violent, right?
Yeah. Well, and I will say this:
but that
it wasn't
fits the story, though.
Yeah, and it wasn't over the top. Like it wasn't like there was times where there was large stretches in between, like the violence and the gore, which is important because again, you know, bad horror films overemphasize that because they don't have story, they don't have any of that other good qualities to a good film to it. So.
Look at the great film Jaws. We don't see the shark really till about, an hour and 10 minutes into the film. Yeah. So the suspense, I mean, if that was made today, they'd have to have the shark out there as the star of the film, which he was in Jaws, but he would be out prominent, 2 minutes in. We don't get to see him till about 70 minutes into a 2-hour film, which is what made that such a great film.
No, yeah, and I love that movie, by the way, too. And it's getting almost that time. I gotta watch it again. I haven't seen it probably since last summer. It's usually around the time I usually run through them because they usually, at some point, they'll throw them up on like Netflix or HBO, and I'm like, oh, look, it's Jaws. Even though I have like the DVDs right behind me, I do that a lot. Where it's like, I mean, I see a movie that obviously I own, but. I don't know. I don't want to get into it. That my weird habits that I have.
Oh, I'm with you.
I'm just like, ooh, collection. It's there. Yeah. But
The Godfather happens. I think I was watching The Godfather on Thanksgiving, and I'm like, I have every possible DVD that you could have of this. You know, chronologically, 1, 2, 3. You know, I got it all backwards and forwards, and here I am. You know, on A&E watching it, although that's frustrating because it's like 7 minutes then another commercial.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That would be a turnoff. Like, I would probably, at that point, I'd be like, nah, screw that. If I really wanted to watch it, I would go get the DVD. I mean, again, I have them alphabetized. I have them very organized, John. It's literally the only thing organized in my life is my DVD collection, and I don't even utilize it, so.
That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. There are people you can see on a weekly basis that can help you with foibles. Wearing a Chewbacca outfit or alphabetizing movies. There are people available. They're very expensive.
I would say in the first 8 minutes of the show, I've really opened up this morning to everyone that's listening. So anyways, let's move on. Let's get off of me for a moment and move on to DeAndre Hopkins. Because since we got off the air and since we were on Monday, we have learned that he will be missing the first 6 games of the NFL season due to a suspension. From using performance-enhancing drugs, which, look, John, this is a huge, huge blow to the Cardinals and makes the acquisition of Marquise Brown perhaps make a whole hell of a lot more sense because I would imagine at the time they made that trade, the Cardinals were probably aware of the situation that was coming.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, they had a heads up on this, I'm sure, weeks, if not months ago. Decided to make that trade. I think they overpaid for Marquise Brown. I mean, A.J. Brown is a better receiver, and essentially the deals were similar. But Marquise Brown, maybe he fits in that offense better, and also he was a college teammate and roommate of Kyler Murray. So there's that connection as well. But, yeah, 6 games for DeAndre Hopkins. And my first reaction to this is, what a difference between football and baseball when guys have to serve suspensions for PED use. Like, DeAndre Hopkins will go into the Hall of Fame. I mean, he's on a Hall of Fame track, right? So when his name pops up in 10 years and, you know, a lot of our friends that are on that committee will bandy about it, no one's going to bring up that he failed a test. You know, no one's going to say that at all. But in baseball, you're persona non grata. It's pretty amazing that's how the two sports treat this. I think sometimes because baseball has a holier-than-thou attitude and the BBWAA, it takes itself way too seriously.
Oh, yeah.
So that's probably as much more on baseball than it is on football. But yeah, that's a big blow to the Arizona Cardinals in that tough division. You know, first 6 games he's going to miss. You see what the schedule is next week and who they're going to play in those first 6 weeks. But at least they did make the right move in getting an established receiver, Marquise Brown, who has that connection with Kyler Murray, and maybe they can steady the ship till DeAndre Hopkins comes back in game 7.
Well, first I'll comment on the the PED stuff. You know, and I also think the nature of the sports also, makes PED usage in football not necessarily accepted, but understood. You know what I mean? And it's not that it's, you know, a lot of these times too. I mean, and PED is such a broad term, or it shouldn't be, but it is for many different things. And you know, a lot oftentimes, especially folks that aren't, you know, paying attention day to day, think of PEDs as, you know, you're sitting out back in the locker room sticking a needle into your veins, you know. And a lot of the times this is either a supplement or a human growth hormone, which we've seen other players in the past use to accelerate healing in terms of recovering from injury. And look, in baseball, you don't have the physicality. So I don't think people, and to your point too, of course, the holier than thou hypocritical nature of not only the league, but the coaches and everyone involved, the writers, because, well, when this was going on in the thick of it, no one cared.
No.
And when things started to, you know, go upside down, that's when it became, oh, well, you shouldn't be doing this, and we're going to take a stand. No. You had no problems promoting the home run ratio. No problems, you know, with Barry Bonds at the time, other than you thought he was a jerk, you know. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh, the guy ruined baseball, this, that, and the other. All right, whatever. Look, and I'm not saying every single I'm sure there are people out there that were very against it from the get-go and certainly very adamant, you know, during. But my feeling was, especially across the league executives, commissioners, all that stuff, it was just, okay, just, we know it's happening, we're just not gonna do anything about it. So
you can make a case that Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa saved baseball. By the time Bonds broke easily. The record, people were kind of over it. But yeah, those two guys, the summer of 98, really saved the sport. And now those are two players that, you know, don't have a chance to make it into the Hall of Fame, and Bonds is going to have to go through the Veterans Committee, which is going to be a tough task as well. But I think what happens, Ian, is in football, it's not as much about numbers. Mm-hmm. So if you're an offensive lineman and you're Hall of Fame caliber and you serve the suspension for PEDs, it's just written off as, well, you know what, I had to take them because the guy across from me is taking them, so how am I supposed to battle him? And we know the violent nature of football, the recovery period is so intense that you kind of need it to get through. Now, other people will say that you need something to get through a baseball season because it's so long and drawn out and, you know, players kind of lose focus a little bit. But, yeah, baseball is about numbers. Football is not necessarily about numbers other than quarterbacks. And, you know, I don't know how PEDs are really going to help quarterbacks all that much other than if they can recover from injuries. But people don't go down that road.
Yeah, well, it's like, look, I mean, PEDs would do the exact opposite to Tom Brady. You know, because it's about, you
yeah,
know
he
what
doesn't
I mean?
Need that.
He's his, obviously, his philosophy, you know, when it comes to working out is more about elongating muscles and stuff like that, as opposed to where PEDs, you're, you know, the idea is that your muscle recovery improves, and also that you get bigger and stronger. I mean, that's sure. That's the, you know, I guess the most basic form of PEDs. Now, again, it's far more complicated than that. I'm not just, you know, putting a blanket statement over every single PED, but that's, you know, again, that's for the most part, that's the nuts and bolts of it. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think from an actual in-season standpoint, this is going to hurt. I don't care that they got Marquise Brown, because I'm not that high on this Cardinals team to begin with. And now I think you take away your best offensive player for six games. That's a tough thing to overcome, especially in football, because that's a third of your season right there gone. And for a quarterback who I think is at a very important fork in the road in his career right now with Kyler Murray, like, this isn't a guy that's well established, that's a veteran leader that can over, you know, that we know is going to overcome this. He could. I'm not saying he can't, but there's nothing to suggest that he is capable and will be able to do this and keep this team afloat without their best offensive weapon. So, yeah, I would, if I'm a Cardinals fan, I'm worried just from a football standpoint that the first six games of the season, traditionally, John, where they've played really well. Remember, they're a Cliff Kingsbury team, start great, finish terribly. what happens when they start terribly and then also finish terribly? That's a problem.
Yeah, well, he's fortunate that he has a long-term contract now. He signed that extension, so he'll be fine. Kyler Murray still, I think they gave him his 50-year option, so that gives him 2 more years to prove that he's a true franchise quarterback. And as far as DeAndre Hopkins, we all agree he's one of the 5 best receivers in football, right? I mean, I can make a case.
Yeah.
He's right there with Devontae Adams, Cooper Kupp, and pick a few other guys. The thing is, last year he missed 5 games. In those 5 games, Arizona was 1-4.
Yep.
So we know how good
he is. That's a great point.
Yeah, and look at the year that he missed in Houston. What did Houston go, 4-12, even though Deshaun Watson put up really good numbers? I mean, this guy's an impact player, so to not have him for the first 6 weeks is troubling. And again, you have to see what happens with the schedule. You know, are they going to play the Rams twice in that first 6 week period? Although not likely. They generally try to spread those games out a little bit more. But and that's a tough division. We know the Rams are the defending champs, and San Francisco still has a good roster. They're going to figure out their quarterback situation. Seattle's in a rebuild. But yeah, you can't lose a player of that caliber for that long period of time and not be hurt by it.
Yeah. And again, for Kyler Murray, I know he has the, the 5th year option picked up, but you know, if he has another mediocre season or an unsuccessful season this year, I don't care about that 5th year option. The Cardinals are going to be looking for his replacement. You know what I mean?
Sure.
That doesn't guarantee, like, the option gives him a little bit more security, but it doesn't guarantee him anything. So, you know, the importance of this season for Kyler Murray is hugely important for him. And now, one of his best tools to have a great season is broken and will not be fixed and will not be returned until the end of October. And that could be too little too late. I mean, fortunately for them, they're in the NFC and not the AFC. Now, again, we're basing a lot of this. We could be looking at this a year from now and being like, how the hell did we think the AFC was going to be better than the NFC? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But right now, on paper, based on everything we've seen in the offseason, you know, we can kind of say, all right, the AFC looks like it's going to have maybe not the best team in the league. I mean, you could still argue that the Rams or the Bucks or, you know, you know, my thoughts of I'm hesitant on the Packers just because, like, I'm very curious to see what this new offense without Devontae Adams is going to be. So I'm kind of putting them in a tier by themselves, whereas they're just below the Rams and Bucks, but you know what I mean? Like, higher than everyone else in the NFC. Because I just don't know, John. I don't want to make a judgment. It would just be a pure guess. I'm just, again, like, I think the Packers are going to be fine, but I still am trying. It's hard for me to reconcile how to replicate or at least replace some of what Devontae Adams did for this team over the last 2 years, in which I thought they were at their very best since they won a Super Bowl. So that's going to be interesting, but that opens up the door for Arizona to maybe overcome maybe a slow start if that happens. But that means they'd have to go and reverse course on what they normally do, which is plummet in the second half. Like, you can't have a bad second half like they've done every single season under Cliff Kingsbury. You just can't, because then you're going to be 4-13.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look at last year. Philadelphia made the playoffs at 9-8. So maybe 9-8 gets you into the NFC playoffs, whereas in the AFC, 9-8 didn't get you in. Look at the Chargers. Look at the Colts. They didn't make it. You needed 10 wins to get in. And again, that can all flip-flop in a given year. We don't know for sure. The AFC does look like it's loaded. The NFC looks like it's not quite as deep. I think some of the top teams in the NFC certainly can compete.
Oh,
you've got the last
absolutely.
Super Bowl champions, right, and the Rams and Tampa. And if Green Bay can patch together some wide receivers, I think their defense is going to be even better, and they still have an elite quarterback. So, yeah. And the team that I think really improved in the offseason was Philadelphia, which, you know, I think can challenge and maybe beat Dallas for the NFC East. Because let's not forget, there hasn't been a repeat NFC East champ since 2004, nearly 20 years ago.
It's like
crazy. 1 year Dallas, the next year Philly, the Giants pop in, here comes Washington. So who the hell knows what's going to happen in that division. But, yeah, that's a big loss for Arizona. But, you know, again, they were fortunate or smart to go out and get Marquise Brown, who, again, I think is a good, not a great receiver, but maybe he'll even be better than he was in Baltimore because of his connection with Kyler Murray, who I think can deliver the football better than Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Sam DeBakey is a better quarterback, but I think he's a better thrower of the football than Lamar Jackson at this point.
Yeah, it's tough. And of course, no one's going to sit here and pretend like Marquise Brown is half the receiver DeAndre Hopkins is, because again, I think we both agree that DeAndre Hopkins is very, very much among that very select group of receivers that at any given point you could consider the best in the league. And we often mention Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams among that group.
Yeah, and Cooper Kupp.
The last year, I would say great. Those other three guys though have done it longer,
right?
And I think this is nothing. This is not taking away anything from Cooper Kupp, but as impressive as his season is, those three guys have consistently under. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at DeAndre Hopkins and some of the receivers he's had to play with. Some of the quarterbacks he's had to play with.
About him, yeah. You're right. Yeah. His first 5 years in the league, he played with like mediocre, mm-hmm. poor quarterback. And then Deshaun Watson comes along as a young guy, and now they become an elite.
Yeah, and look, maybe Cooper Kupp comes back to earth, and he's. I mean, I can't imagine he's ever going to reach the. I don't think any. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a knock. I mean, that was just a historically great season, but like, it's kind of like with the quarterback thing to me. Like, mm-hmm. just because Patrick Mahomes had a great 2018 season doesn't all of a sudden, in my opinion, make him better than Tom Brady. I mean, it doesn't.
Right.
I mean, you'd be like, oh, what a great season. Well, yeah, that's good. But, like, let's see how it plays out. And, look, he's had a great career. But the problem is, for him, Tom's had a better stretch during both their time in the league. So it's like you can't.
Yeah,
realistically, make the case like, oh, all of a sudden he's better. Well, no, and that's
so
kind of
Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers has won two MVPs.
Yeah, two MVPs.
Well, been in the league, and I'm not going to start you with that one.
We're having a great off season, John. We're not even going to talk about that. We'll save that for when it gets to September and people.
How about them Celtics?
Yes, yes, exactly. We're going to get to them in just a moment, but. Yeah, so same thing applies with these receivers. Like, just, I mean, Cooper Kupp, unbelievable season, deserved every bit of accolade, every bit of praise that he got. But it doesn't all of a sudden, in my opinion, make him better than Devontae Adams. It doesn't make him better than Tyreek Hill. Now, that could play out. Perhaps he has another really great season and those guys take a step back. I don't know. Mm-hmm. If I knew, again, this is what I tell people all the time, like that say, oh, I know, it's like, oh, I know Cole Strange was going to be 54th. I'm like, do you have a crystal ball? Like, how do you know?
Right.
No, you don't know. What you're saying is you're guessing. And what I'm guessing is, you know, I don't think there's going to be a dramatic drop-off from the previous great receivers and then a continued climb from Cooper Kupp. I think they're all great receivers, but if you're going to ask me who would be the top receiver in the league, probably be about three guys I'd get through before I got to Cooper Kupp. And that's not an insult to him. That's just my philosophy in ranking players that have, over several seasons, displayed a high level of production and consistency and have constantly been in that conversation. Like, to me,
and
there's got to be consistency.
And we've got to see what happens with Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill now that they don't have Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes throwing the football. Instead, they have Derek Carr, who we think is a really good quarterback, you know, maybe the 12th or 13th best quarterback in football. And then Tua, who I think is one of the worst starting quarterbacks, although he's got a lot of toys around him. I've said this before, you know, and I love Devontae Adams, one of my favorite players. It's not like I've disowned him because he went to the Raiders. I'm still going to root for him. But by game three, when he's open and Derek Carr delivers a ball at his toes or over his head into the stands, you know, what's his reaction going to be? Because he did get to play with an all-time great quarterback. And that doesn't
make
it easier.
They played together before, so I mean they went to
that's true at Fresno State.
But yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sure there'll be some chemistry there. And look, he wanted to go. I give a guy credit for who just probably could have made a few more bucks in Green Bay and said, you know what, I just want to go to Vegas. I grew up a Raiders fan. I think most of us would rather
Vegas,
live in Vegas than
Green
Bay.
Vegas,
right.
Green
yeah.
Bay.
Yeah.
I think there's a very obvious choice there.
I don't need long pants and sweatshirts and hooded sweats and parkas and all that other fun stuff. I can swim in my pool 12 months a year if I want.
I saw Devondre Campbell tweet out something about you know, all the places around Green Bay to get your car tinted are like booked through June. I'm thinking to myself, like, I could go down the street to a place I could walk to and get it done today. I mean, and that kind of speaks to the difference between, I'm sure, Green Bay, Wisconsin, and certainly any sort of city.
Any other city?
Yeah, any other city in the country. Like, I'm speaking about St. Petersburg, but Vegas, obviously, you know, you can get your car windows tinted at 4 o'clock in the morning and get a sure. you know a 4 foot long margarita too. Yeah, so exactly. You know, it's
a little bit different.
Yeah, just a tad bit different. But, you know, look, that connection, obviously, with Derek Carr, I'm sure played a huge role in this. The Raiders team itself, you know, everything about it was a positive for Adam. So, you know, we'll see what happens with all this. We'll see how the Cardinals respond. Like I said, if you're Cardinals fans, I would be worried. I put the panic meter up over that middle threshold, maybe at a 6 or 7, because, you know, hey, mm-hmm. when you take Hopkins out of this mix, it's going to be difficult. So, all right, let's talk about those Celtics real quick before we head out of here for the day. We said after game one that, or at least I said it, and I know you obviously agree because you know far more about basketball than I do. I wasn't necessarily worried after that mm-hmm. game one. Loss for if you're a Celtics fan, because again, I thought they were getting good shots, they just weren't making them. And we mm-hmm. saw in game two that was not the case. It was the exact opposite. And I think ultimately we're going to land somewhere in between, and you're going to see perhaps maybe another 3 or 4 games, 5 games in the series that are super close and down to the wire between these two teams. But what I saw last night was a very encouraging sign and fun to watch, fun basketball. Some of that ball movement on the Celtics' behalf was just incredible and fun to watch, and something that I thought at one point was absent in today's NBA, and that is passing more than once or twice and taking a mm-hmm. three-pointer. Now, that happened in the second half, and that was a little discouraging when you kind of see them revert to the and they kept referring to it on the broadcast as just a one-and-done, basically a quick pass and a shoot. And, like, yeah, okay, when you're cold, that's not that fun, and you can very quickly lose a lead. But I thought the Celtics played really well. I thought their defense was very good. What did you see that, you know, they changed up, you know, from a more... Yeah. Observant eye than myself.
Offense, what they did was they were able to at least penetrate some, and if they weren't getting to the cup to finish, because it's very difficult to do that against Milwaukee with Lopez and Giannis, they're great rim protectors, but at least they were taking some mid-range shots. The first two baskets they scored were mid-range shots, so that kind of loosens the defense up a little bit. And then what they were doing is they were really moving the ball side to side, which can tire the defense out, and also they were passing up decent three-pointers for better three-pointers. That extra pass, like you said, uh-huh. Ian, gives you a better look. I mean, there were some possessions where every member of the Celtics touched the ball, and that's going to tire out the defense, and now you've got a wide-open three, whether it was Grant Williams or Jaylen Brown. Later in the game, Jason Tatum was able to hit some shots, so it was just better ball movement there. They took their foot off the gas in the second half, but that's the NBA. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not going to generally see 4 quarters of perfect basketball. We see that in the NFL. I mean, the Buccaneers won 13 games last year. How many times do we talk on a Monday? Like, they got off to a great start. They were up 21 points, and they kind of got a little bit out of sorts in the third or fourth quarter. That happens all the time in sports, right? I mean, you don't score a run every inning in baseball unless you're facing the Cincinnati Reds, apparently. Yeah. But, I think it was an encouraging game. And again, defensively, Al Horford and Grant Williams did a great job against Giannis. He was 11 of 27 from the floor. So he's 20 of 52 from the floor in the series, which is below 40%. Giannis is an efficient scorer. He's over 50% throughout his career. So they're making him work real hard and take more shots to get his points. But they also closed in on those three-point shooters really well last night, because that's what hurt them in game one, because Milwaukee was able to hit their threes. Milwaukee didn't even take many threes last night. They were 3 of 18. They didn't have a chance, because the Celtics weren't doubling as much on Giannis. And again, he's a guy who likes contact. Most basketball players don't like contact.
He likes it because he can get away with it. Let's be honest. Yeah. I mean, we talked before we got...
He's also a force, too. Yeah. I mean, like, Kevin Durant shies away from it because he's about as thin as my pinky finger, whereas Giannis is, you know, put together. And LeBron likes contact, too, because he's big, strong guys. But, yeah, and they can get away with it. They're superstars, absolutely. But, you know, give Grant Williams, who's given up 5 inches, he just battled and played a really, really good game. Grant Williams is a lot like P.J. Tucker, who was on Milwaukee last year, mm-hmm. helped them win a championship, and is now on Miami, is going to make them a contending team here in the playoffs. 6'5" guy who's stout, who gets under your skin because he's a tenacious defender who is really good at hitting corner threes. They're very similar players. You need a guy like that on your team. You're not going to win with just, you know.
Yeah,
look at the Lakers. The Lakers just had a bunch of guys that were former All-Stars who weren't good anymore, and they didn't accept their roles. This guy understands what his role is.
Yeah, I was going to say, you saw the little shoulder bump he gave Giannis. You saw it, you know, right after one. Yeah. I can't remember specifically what series it was, but he just, you know, straight face, straight ahead, just walk by, boom, just bump the shoulder. And that's what you want, though. You know, that's the type. And added bonus, the guy can get absolutely on fire from 3-point range. I mean, that's the thing. It's like you're you know, when you talk about losing, and this is how great the Celtics defense is you lose the defensive player of the year. And you really don't miss a beat because you have other guys that can do. Now, I don't think that any of those other guys can do exactly what Marcus Smart does. I don't want to diminish, you know, because, you know, the Marcus Smart haters out there will point to and see, look at that. This is more about the team. No, Marcus is a, on many levels, a great player, great defensive player. And you've talked about how your view of him has altered because he's changed his game. And he's become more of a leader. He's become more of a smarter basketball player. But when you have guys like Grant Williams who can come in and literally just be an absolute, like, I mean, just a block, a cement block right down there. And I mean, take hit after hit after hit and, you know, getting to the head of those guys. Because it's like all of a sudden, if Giannis starts getting, you know, beat up a little bit, and maybe he does get a little bit sloppy and it becomes harder to not call those charges against him. I mean, again, you can, you know, we were talking about expected shots or shot quality or whatever before we got on the air today. Well, what was like the expected charge number? What was the actual charge number? That's what I want to know.
Right.
Because, I mean, you can make an argument that he had about 4 or 5 of them in just the second half alone, but as long as you stay consistent and just take your licks when you can, you're going to get fouls called on you every so often. You're just going to have to deal with it, you know, handle it, and eventually it's going to pay off in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, and again, they forced 6 turnovers from Giannis, who's a really good passer. So he kind of took that away from him a little bit, and other players weren't able to really contribute. So it came down to Giannis trying to get them back in the game in the second half. And they did cut it to 12, but the Celtics did what they had to do. This is the NBA, though. I mean, now you've got a 1-1 series, best of 5. Milwaukee has home court advantage. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to see game 3 till Saturday. There's this long gap between games 2 and games 3. And that might help the Celtics because Jaylen Brown's dealing with that hamstring and Marcus Smart's dealing with a myriad of injuries. So maybe those guys are healthier by Saturday. I don't think anybody's going to be healthy till the season's over. They're all banged up. But that could help the Celtics as well. This is going to be a 6 or 7-game series. And the interesting thing is you may see a 6 or 7-game series with very few close games. Like the Celtics beat Brooklyn in a sweep, but the games are relatively close. They only outscored them by 18 points in the 4 games. The Milwaukee Celtics series might just be a case of who shoots better from 3.
Yeah.
That team's going to win that night, and they're going to win somewhat comfortably. That could happen as well. But it's a fascinating series because these are 2 teams that do play defense.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. There's not going to be any easy baskets between the two of them. So it really is about that 3-point shot. Who can create the advantage out there? Because, well, you're not going to get anything easy underneath. And even if you are Giannis, I mean, you're obviously still have an advantage being his size, but you're still – like they just could not get into the paint in the first half. I mean, it was just it was a excellent display of defense from Boston, which again, that's what they do. That's what Boston does. So it's not looking at it saying, "Oh, wow, the Celtics played the game of their life defensively." No, they played their game defensively. Not the game of their life, their game. You just hope that the offense can continue to make those plays, and you know, to Stan Van Gundy's point, when they're hitting shots early, the Bucks can't get into transition. Without transition, you're not going to get those fast break points and those big rushes from Giannis, which, again, not only add to the scoreboard, but obviously add to, we know how basketball is. It's a game of momentum. It's not about exactly, you know, it's not all about baskets going in, but it's about timing. It's about situation. It's about crowd reaction and how that all plays into everything. Like, I mean, just it's which makes it fun. So yeah, I think I might agree with you that it could get to the point where we're just having basically double digit wins the entire time, but it goes 7 games. But again, maybe we get down to the point where they're going last shot and going down to the wire. We'll see.
That'd be fun.
Yeah,
especially we'll game seven, because players tend to tighten up in game seven.
Yeah,
I mean, we saw what the Lakers beat the Celtics in 2010. I think it was 83-78.
Yeah,
with all that talent on the floor, 83-78, no one could shoot. It felt like they were playing outdoors in the wind. But that does happen in game seven. Look, even in 2016 when the Cavaliers beat the Warriors in game six, it's a fairly low scoring game. No one could buy a basket down the stretch. So that does happen, especially when you have two teams that play defense. But this is going to be a long series. And it's just, unfortunately, we've got to wait till, like, you know, next month, it feels like, for game three.
I know. Oh, well. But but when it does happen, we will react to it on Monday when hopefully the Celtics pick up another win. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We will we'll talk to you soon. Give us a follow on Twitter at FPC Radio Live, at Full Press Radio. And, of course, go to fullpresscoverage.com and check out all the great stuff that's up there, including this podcast and many, many more. Have a great weekend, or have a great day. Sorry, got ahead of myself there. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you later.